It's 1900 UTC, and that means it's time for That's News to Me. I'm your host, DJ Marcus. Let's see what's happening in the world today.
Oh boy. Hello. Welcome, one and all. The show starting at 1900 UTC means one big thing. That's right. It's an office work day, which means that I had to pre-record. My displays have turned off, so I think that means that my computer's working extra hard to record this for you. But it also means, oh, there they go, they turned back on. Sorry. Sometimes my computer, I have a USB-C dock, and what happens is I installed a Thunderbolt 3 card into my computer, ran the cord through the wall to a USB-C dock, and it has two HDMI ports, and so it should be able to run two 1080p displays, which is what I have connected. Fortunately, it works, but occasionally one or the other displays or both of the displays blank out for a minute if it's under heavy load or something. So I'm going to just close any excessive applications I might have running and just go ahead and say thank you for being here. If you'd like to hang out and talk in comm, all you need to do is SSH over to SDF and then launch comm. Just type COM and press enter. And then once you do that, you'll press G for go to and then type anon radio, all lowercase, all one word. If you're brand new to SDF, there's FAQ and help commands in the terminal once you connect to this to the cluster. Or if you want, you can just read the wiki at wiki.sdf.org. That will cover most of what you need to know. Whew. Oh, man. Okay, I got all of that out. Can't forget Dubious Goals Committee with Tobe comes up at 1930 UTC just after this show. And then after that is it's Tuesday. Yeah, it's Tuesday. So that means it's Internet Noises with DJ Leon G. And if I forgot to mention it, I'll tell you now. It is May 10th, 2022. And it is 1903 UTC, almost 1903 UTC. So let's go ahead and get started the way we pretty much always start. And that, my friends, is with
World News.
That's right, World News. I'm thinking I might redo the sound effects. I'm going to take some time off at the end of July, which will be the second year. July 1st is, I think, when we started the show. So that'll be 2 years. And so I think it'll be time to set up new sound effects and a new intro and all of that. I just am surprised. The only thing I've done longer than this has been when I was on the board of the co-op. So I'm pretty excited. All right, let's get going. First, top of the hour, top of the news. Sri Lankan troops on streets after protesters torch leaders' homes in night of unrest. Now, if you don't know, in Sri Lanka, the president and the prime minister are brothers. And the prime minister we talked about yesterday, he resigned over the financial crisis going on there. They've had huge inflation, but protests have been going on. I'm not sure what they want to do to this guy. We're about to find out. But they went to his family home in his hometown and burned down his house. So that's how mad the people are at this prime minister. Meanwhile, the president, nobody's mad at him. All right, let's go. A curfew is in force across Sri Lanka after mobs burned down homes belonging to the ruling Rajapaksa family amid mounting anger at the economic crisis. The overnight violence capped a day of unrest that saw PM Mahinda Rajapaksa quit, but this failed to bring calm. Crowds besieged his residence, and he was evacuated in a pre-dawn operation amid tear gas and warning shots. Protests are continuing despite the curfew. 7 people have died and 200 have been injured since Monday. The island-wide curfew has been extended to Wednesday morning as authorities seek to quell the violence. The streets of the capital are empty, but evidence of last night's violence is everywhere. Buses thrown into the lake, others with windows smashed out and tires still burning. There is a heavy police presence outside the PM's house where there were scenes of chaos hours before. At officials say a senior policeman's receiving hospital treatment after being assaulted by two men in Colombo, the capital there, who accused him of failing to prevent the attacks on anti-government protesters. More than 50 houses of politicians were burnt overnight, reports say. Crowds remain outside the offices of President Gotabaya Rajapaksa, brother of Mahinda, calling on him to quit. Sri Lankans are still reeling from violence that has erupted. Many politicians are sheltering in safe houses or avoiding appearing in public. It's not all it's at all safe, particularly for politicians on the government side. Mahinda Rajapaksa, once celebrated by the majority Sinhalese as a war hero for defeating the Tamil Tiger rebels, has suddenly become a villain. Many blame his supporters for targeting anti-government protesters, which then set off a chain of events. They've been having escalating demonstrations over soaring prices and power cuts. So, yeah, it's really troubling, really rough time over there. A lot of violence. But like everywhere, when the people protest, the government... I think this happens everywhere. When the people protest about something, the government shows up and tries to beat them or control them in some way. Whether or not they listen to their why they're protesting, anybody's guess. The political process, everyone. Same in Sri Lanka as it is here in the U.S., as it is anywhere else in the world, I guess. Well, let's get back to something more, something we're kind of used to. That's right. Over 40 migrants drowned off Western Sahara. At least 44 migrants drowned after their boat sank on Sunday off Western Sahara, in southern Morocco, the Spanish NGO Caminado Frontera said. Moroccan authorities are yet to confirm the deaths, however. According to Helena Moleno, the founder of the NGO, 44 migrants died after their boat sank off Cape Boujdour. It's Boujdour. So it looks like... I know it's a French word, but good luck me saying it. I think it's Cape Boujdour, Western Sahara. Seven bodies were transferred to the morgue, and the other victims were swallowed by the sea. 12 other migrants survived the sinking and were arrested. Helena Melanon did not specify the destination of the boat, but migrant boats departing from this area usually head for the Spanish archipelago of the Canaries, located at the northwestern tip of Africa. Morocco is a transit country for many migrants seeking to reach Europe from its Atlantic or Mediterranean coasts. According to figures from the Moroccan Ministry of the Interior, more than 14,700 attempted illegal departures were prevented and 52 smuggling networks dismantled in Morocco during the first quarter of 2022. In 2021, 4,404 migrants died or disappeared during the crossing the sea to Spain, the worst toll since 2015. According to the latest figures, the Spanish Interior Ministry, more than 40,000 migrants, mostly from Morocco, arrived in the country by sea in 2021, as well as the Balearic and Canary Islands. And if you haven't looked on a map, the Canary Islands are really small, and they're really tiny islands in the big, big ocean. It's kind of neat that they exist at all. Let me see if I can get a good map. Maps, man, they're my downfall. I love... looking at a map for of places. So let's look at our image results and see if we can't find. All right, so those are the Canary Islands. Show me next to, here we go. All right, copy image link. And we're gonna go to tx.0.org to throw this into perspective. All right, that'll take a minute to load, so let's go ahead and continue on, and then we'll come on through with that link in a minute. Philippines election. Bongbong Marcos poised to win presidency in landslide. Ferdinand Bongbong Marcos Jr., son of former Philippines dictator, is headed for a landslide win in the country's presidential race, according to partial and preliminary results. We're recording this at... this news story is 5 hours old as of... 12:30 UTC. They may have figured it out by now, but that's the latest I have right now. Mr. Marcos's victory would return his family to power 36 years after they were ousted by a popular revolution. Critics allege his campaign was fueled by misinformation. Turnout on voting day was high, and previous elections in the country have largely been ruled to be fair. Isolated incidents of violence, including the shooting of three people near a polling station, were not reflected widely across the country. But the BBC's Howard Johnson in Manila says there are lingering questions about broken machines at polling stations and videos allegedly showing vote buying. Opinion polls in the run-up to the election put Mr. Marcos ahead of his nearest rival, Ms. Robredo, by dozens of percentage points. Critics say this was the result of Mr. Marcos Jr. consistently painting his father's rule as a golden age for the Philippines, whitewashing a period of rampant corruption and widespread poverty. His father became president in 1965 and imposed martial law in 1972 and presided over a brutal regime which saw thousands of dissenters and critics jailed. Mr. Marcos Sr., who died in 1989, and his wife Imelda stole an estimated $10 billion from the Philippines, becoming infamous examples of public graft. His wife famously had a lot of shoes that were very popular. So anyway, it was a big ha-ha at the time, if I remember right. All right, let's go ahead here and give you a map of the Canary Islands, or at least where you can see it. Let's see if this will give us... There it is, tx0.org. /Y9, that's Yankee 9. So TX0, Tango X-ray number 0, .org, /Y9, and that will get you a map. I'll double test it by opening it in a private window. TX0.org /Y9, Yankee 9er, and that... Boom. All right, yeah, it does load up. It is a map of showing where the Canary Islands in relation to Spain and Africa. Of course, it's not to scale, so I would encourage you to look on like Google Earth or something. But the Canary Islands are basically just some islands just off the coast of in where Morocco and Western Sahara meet. All right, sorry, I just think that's pretty cool. I love maps. All right. Let's keep it moving. Oh, my gosh. This guy.
Get the news over with. I want to hear the music.
Yeah. We're going to get there. Let's go ahead and run through some other world headlines real quick, though. German foreign minister vows justice for Buka on surprise Ukraine visit. German foreign minister Annalena Baerbock paid a surprise visit to Ukraine's martyred town of Buka on Tuesday, a day after Russian missiles pounded the strategic port city of Odessa. Earlier, diplomats said the UN Security Council would host a crisis meeting on Thursday to discuss the worsening humanitarian situation in Ukraine. Following France 24's live blog for the latest developments, all times are Paris time, which is GMT plus 2. So this is last updated 7 minutes ago, which makes sense. German foreign minister was joined by her Dutch counterpart, Wopke Hoekstra, as they visited war-torn areas around Kyiv earlier today. Both visits were unannounced, with Baerbock visiting Buka, a town that's synonymous with allegations of war crimes. After talks with locals, the German minister said Buka was a place where the worst crimes imaginable have happened, promising to hold accountable those responsible. "We owe it to the victims to not only commemorate here, but also to hold the perpetrators accountable. This is what we are going to do as the international community. That's a promise that we can and must give here in Buka," she said. "No one can take away the pain, but we can ensure justice." Separately, Hoekstra tweeted that he had arrived during the morning in Kyiv for meetings with the Ukrainian government, together with my colleague, Annalena Baerbock, starting my visit in Irpin, a suburb of Kyiv, he wrote of another town near Buka, where Russian troops are alleged to have carried out atrocities, posting pictures of himself near war-scarred buildings. And, of course, civilian death toll is thousands higher than reported, according to the UN. We'll get the real toll once the people stop being killed. And one last thing here for you. Spain's spy chief sacked after Pegasus spyware revelations. The Spanish government has reportedly sacked the country's spy chief, Paz Esteban, following revelations that the intelligence service hacked the phones of leading members of the Catalan independence movement and that Pegasus spyware was used in external attacks on the mobiles of the prime minister and defense minister. Spanish media, citing unidentified government sources, said on Tuesday that Esteban, the head of the National Intelligence Center, had been fired after coming under increasing pressure in recent weeks. Esteban reportedly confirmed last week to Congressional Committee that 18 members of the Catalan independence movement were spied on with the judicial approval by Spain's National Intelligence Center, leaving the Catalan regional government demanding answers. So yeah, that's what's happening there. Of course, one of my favorite little bits of Catalan, sorry, I said that very Texas, Catalan, Catalan, I guess it's just going to sound that way now. Anyway, the Catalan country, what was funny was in, there's a movie I just watched where, I think it's the latest Nick Cage movie. There's a lot of stuff going on in Catalan, and it's Catalonia, and it's like, what? What are you talking about? They pretend like it's some kind of made up country, and it's like it's a real place. There are people there. Anyway, this is Eleanor Rigby. I couldn't get this song out of my head this morning.
Up the rice in the church where a wedding has been. Lives in a dream, waits at the window, wearing the face that she keeps in a jar by the door. Who is it for? All the lonely people. Where do they all come from? All the lonely people. Where do they all belong? Father Mackenzie, writing the words of a sermon that no one will hear. No one comes near, look at him working, darning his socks in the night when there's nobody there. What does he care? All the lonely people, where do they all come from? All the lonely people, where do they all belong?
Anon Radio is your non-commercial, non-profit, member-supported underground radio station.
Powered by the SDF Public Access Unix System.
That's right. You're listening to Anon Radio, powered by SDF. And SDF, well, that's powered by you. So thank you so much for being here, and thanks for hanging out, listening to the news before the Dubious Goals Committee, which happens in just about 11 and a half minutes. That's going to be the Dubious Goals Committee, led by the Chairman Tobe, and the wonderful Vice President, I think is her official title, but Pippa may make an appearance. Lots of synthesizers and other fun stuff, I'm sure. It will be a blast. You want to check it out. And then after that is Internet Noises. So just stick around. Hang out. Hang out and calm. Chat. I'm going to be diligently working. I'm hard at work. I don't ever not work at work. So yeah, I'll have calm up. And if I have, while I'm waiting for my code to compile or something, I'll chat and calm. All right. Let's get back to it. Let's do some domestic news real quick. We've got about, like I said, we've got around 10 minutes, so let me do some domestic news, and we'll work our way back into the international stuff. So, in the United States, there was a leaked draft of a Supreme Court ruling, which would basically overturn a court case called Roe v. Wade, which ensures that abortions are legal in the United States, or basically says that women have a right to have access to this procedure. Well, the fire department of New York says man in a ladder 58 jacket shouting "Your body is mine" at abortion rights activists is not a member. A man wearing an official fire department ladder 58 jacket has sparked a social media brouhaha after shouting "Your body is mine and you're having my baby" at abortion rights protesters, prompting the fire department to deny on Twitter that he's a member. The footage emerged over the weekend, showing the man standing on the steps of Old St. Patrick's Cathedral, a Catholic church in Lower Manhattan, as activists chanted and waved signs outside. Some clips show the man, who's also wearing an America First hat, praying the rosary with at least a dozen other people. The viral footage, however, shows him standing with just three other men and ranting at the crowd. "I am the people," he shouted. "The people have decided. The court has decided. You lose." He continued, "You have no choice. Not your body, not your choice. Your body is mine and you're having my baby." Which is just scary shit to hear or read or see. There was swift backlash from social media users as clips circulated in FD New York. Fire Department New York soon responded. So, a video circulating from protests in Manhattan shows an individual wearing an FDNY sweatshirt, read a statement posted on the department Twitter account. The individual in the video is not a member of the New York Fire Department. The comments made do not represent the views of the fire department. This matter is under investigation. A man's jacket. See, and that's what's funny, is the article says jacket. They say sweatshirt. The jacket was emblazed with the surname Powers, along with L58, which stands for L58, Ladder 58, based in the Bronx. Protests have been ongoing across the country since last week, when a leaked memo indicated, like I said, the thing here. So, we'll see. But yeah, it is scary, scary time for anyone who's able to, well, for everyone, but if you can have a baby, oh my God, if you can get pregnant, it is a scary, scary time in the United States right now. It should be for everybody, really, but it's just like, ooh, it makes me angry, but then like feel, I don't know. I don't know what I can do. French socialists. Oh, sorry. Wrong way. U.S. Immigration Agency operates vast surveillance dragnet, study finds. More U.S. stuff. USA. U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement, ICE, has built a massive digital surveillance system that it gives access to personal details of almost every person in America. Researchers from the Center on Privacy and Technology on Tuesday, which is this is a two-year investigation by Georgetown University Law Center found out this information. Researchers from the Center on Privacy and Technology on Tuesday released one of the most comprehensive reviews of ICE activities, concluding that the federal organization has strayed well beyond its duties as an immigration body to become what is in effect a domestic surveillance agency. Operating largely in secret and with minimal public oversight, ICE has amassed a formidable armory of digital capabilities that allow its agents to pull detailed dossiers on nearly anyone, seemingly at any time. The vast mountain of data to which ICE now has access includes driver's license data for 3 of every 4 adults living in the U.S., data drawn from the utility records of 75% of adults covering more than 218 million unique utility customers in all 50 states, information on the movements of drivers in cities that contain 75% of the U.S. population, facial recognition technology drawn from driver's license photos of at least a third of all adults. The Georgetown researchers based their report, American Dragnet, Data-Driven Deportation in the 21st Century, on hundreds of Freedoms of Information requests and a review of more than 100,000 previously unseen ICE spending transactions. The documents reveal the extent to which the agency's surveillance has expanded beyond sharing information with law enforcement to exploiting an array of public and private databases. The agency operates on an enormous dragnet of information stored by state and local government, utility companies, social media platforms, and private data brokers. The end result is that ICE enjoys almost universal reach, with its intelligence weaponized through the use of powerful algorithmic tools for searching and analyzing data. Almost all the activity, the report points out, is done in the absence of warrants and in secret, because well beyond the purview of federal and state authorities. The scale of ICE surveillance shocked even the report's authors. I was alarmed to discover just how easily federal immigration agents can pull detailed records from the most intimate corners of all our lives, Nina Wang, a policy associate at the Center on Privacy and Technology, in a report author told The Guardian. In its attempts to target an ever-growing number of people for detention and deportation, ICE has reached into private homes and lives of almost every person in America. ICE was created in 2003 in the post-9/11 era. Initially, it focused on mining the intelligence-gathering potential of the criminal justice system, operating a scheme known as SCOM, in which digital fingerprint data was shared with it by federal, state, and local law enforcement. Since then, ICE has resorted to databases compiled by non-law enforcement entities to widen its dragnet. The article goes on for a bit more, but you kind of get the picture. Surprise, surprise, not really. There's every government agency out there is jockeying to try and have the most comprehensive data about someone because, you know, if we don't know everything about you, how do we know that you're not a criminal? We need to know what you're thinking. How can we figure this out? Anyway, this dragnet, you can go to AmericanDragnet.org to see the actual report. It's pretty cool that they have their own thing, and it's a Creative Commons by attribution licensed report. So I really applaud them for using Creative Commons licenses. All right, more U.S. news. Ex-prison guard Vicky White dead and inmate Casey White held after manhunt. These two people had the same surname, but they weren't related. And a female prison guard who went on the run with a murder suspect from an Alabama jail has died after shooting herself as the pair were caught. Vicky White, 56, died in hospital after she and Casey White, 38, were arrested in Indiana following an 11-day manhunt. The two had vanished from a prison in Lauderdale County on April 29th. They're believed to have been romantically involved. According to officials, they were last seen. She was transporting him to a bogus mental health evaluation. It was Ms. White's last day at work before retirement. She'd recently sold her home and told colleagues she planned to spend more time at the beach. Late on Monday, the Vandenberg County Coroner's Office confirmed that Vicky White died in a local hospital after shooting herself during the arrest. So, she made it to retirement and was like, I'm going to take off with this man I love. And, well, they got caught. So, anyway, pretty rough stuff. If you're Evansville is, I guess, it might be, let's see. Yeah, basically, there's a crossing of a lot of states. So if you're not from the United States, Alabama, Tennessee, and Kentucky are all states that border each other north and south. And so they fled from Alabama, the prison, which is in the north part of Alabama, through Tennessee, through Kentucky, and they were just on the other side of the border from Kentucky into Illinois. Illinois is the northernmost state that borders the borders Canada, but they were staying there. They were staying in Evansville for a little while, and since she just sold her home, she had a lot of cash, so she was paying cash for everything. All right, what else is going on? 93% of districts in major U.S. cities unaffordable to black residents. Surprised? Not really. More than 90% of neighborhoods in America's major cities were unaffordable to the majority of local black residents at the start of the pandemic, according to a new study on the worsening housing crisis in urban regions across the U.S. The National Equity Atlas, a research initiative focused on racial and economic equality, compared rents and wages in the 100 most populous metropolitan regions in 2019 and examined whether the majority of households of different racial groups made enough to afford median market rents. The findings, published on Tuesday and shared exclusively with The Garden, paint a bleak picture. Only 7% of zip codes in the top 100 metro areas had rents that were affordable to black residents, while 69% of zip codes were affordable to white households. 48 metro areas in the list had no zip codes at all that were affordable to black residents. Only 16% of zip codes in the list had rents that were affordable to Latinx households. And 12 metro areas had zero zip codes with affordable rents for Latinx households, including LA, Orlando, and Miami, cities with large Latinx populations. The majority of zip codes that were affordable black and Latinx or Latine and low-income households were classified as low-opportunity neighborhoods, meaning they've suffered from divestment and lack high-quality schools, clean air, parks, safe streets, good jobs, etc. The United States supported racism for a long, long time, and it's still a systemic and endemic problem. So, but this is just a sad showing that it's continuing on, and racist policies persist. And that's all the time we've got. Stick around for the Dubious Goals Committee and all that jazz.
Well, that sound means that our time's come to an end. Thanks for listening. I'll be back tomorrow And every weekday, Monday through Friday, before the Dubious Goals Committee with Tobe at 1900 UTC. Talk to you then.
Dubious Goals. It's time for the Dubious Goals Committee. Committee time.
7.